One day I was sitting on a bench in the park blocks downtown, and I really felt the Lord kind of say, Justin, will you deny for others what you demand for yourself? So are you going to take opportunities for you and then not allow others to have the same opportunities? And that was this, what I call now a moment of obligation. And it's this small little invitation from God that says, are you going to say yes to this or no?
Welcome back to Called Out. And I say welcome back because it's been a few months since we last released an episode. But starting today, there's going to be a new episode every week for about 6 weeks. You can look forward to new episodes. This is a podcast where we take areas of brokenness, areas of hurt, areas of misunderstanding and confusion, and try and shed light on them as I talk with people around various subjects, and hopefully be able to talk about them in a way that can allow Christian believers, followers of Jesus, to navigate them differently than the world around us, so that as we step out into our jobs, our schools, with our families and friends, we can navigate these areas differently and hopefully be a source of hope and healing and restoration, rather than aiding and continuing the brokenness that we see all around us. My guest on today's show is Justin Zarate. Justin has been a friend of mine for almost a decade now. We first connected at the Mentoring Project, working together to provide mentors to fatherless boys in Portland, Oregon. And right around that time, Justin was starting up the nonprofit that he eventually founded called These Numbers Have Faces, which at this point has provided college education to thousands of students all over Africa. It's really an incredible story that you'll get to hear more about here in just a few minutes. Justin has recently released his first book, Made for These Times, where he talks about making a difference with your life. And as I talk about that idea for many people, it is this overwhelming sense that they know that they are made by God to make a difference with their lives, but they don't know how. And so that is what Justin and I are going to be talking about on this episode. If you can stick around all the way till the end of this episode, I have a special treat. The church that I'm involved with, New Harvest Church in Salem, Oregon, is releasing their first worship album, and I'm going to feature a song from that album at the very end of this episode. The album comes out on September 30th, and there'll be lots of information about that, as well as a bunch of other stuff from this episode in the show notes, which you can find at manofdepravity.com. All the show notes, manofdepravity.com. The first thing that I talked to Justin about as we got together in his office in East Portland recently was what made him be the kind of person that wanted to leverage his life to make the difference for others. There's a lot of people who have drive and ambition. There's a lot of people who have a sense that God could be equipping them for something. And yet there is very few who kind of put the two together to really ultimately change people's lives. And so we really started out by me asking him, what was it about his life, his background, his makeup that made it so he wanted to do these kinds of things, like provide college education for underprivileged and under-resourced, lacking opportunity students in Africa? What was it about him that set him up to make all of these steps? So let's start there as he answers that question.
There's something that happened to me as a kid. My mom was this amazing kind of, you know, activist and just really cared a lot about important things around the world and passionate in our church and passionate in our community. She currently is the person that works for the local political candidates as their like sign person, meaning that when someone like signs up to give money or whatever, she then goes to their house and like plants the like yard sign, you know, in their home. And so she's sort of always been like that. And apparently my mom used to, one, she would like pray over my bed when I was a toddler that I would go on to do something for others and that I would reflect, you know, the kingdom values in really powerful ways. But two, by the time I was about 10, every Friday night over dinner, she would pull out the LA Times and then our local paper and explain to us, hey, here's what's happening in Colombia. Here's what's happening in DC. Here's what's happening in the Middle East or in Northern Africa or whatever. And as a kid, I hated that. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world, you know?
Like, I don't want to read the sports section.
Exactly. Or like the comics, sports page, anything. And I was just like, this is so dumb. But for some reason, my mom, I think, really instilled this thing that there is a world beyond your little house here, beyond your high school, beyond your little college. There's more to life than just your own issues and dating or whatever you like are thinking about when you're in high school or college. So I think there was that. And then going to college, I went to a small liberal arts school called Westmont College, and I'm actually the 14th of my family to go to the same school. So like, you don't mess around, you know? And I had really incredible mentors throughout the whole time. I did this great Europe semester program my senior year, so traveled a bit. And then the last thing is I had some mentors of mine when I graduated who basically forced me out and said, look, man, like, you've got to leave. If you don't, you'll get stuck kind of in the same world. And, which is great, you know, nice little place. Again, I was from a really great place in California. Like, you need to get out. So that's kind of how I think it's kind of got pushed out. That there was more to life outside of my own little borders, so to speak.
So eventually after college, kind of tell the story of within a few years after that, you started the nonprofit These Numbers Have Faces.
Yeah.
Can you kind of walk us through the timeline from graduating college to different places you went and then ended up starting this nonprofit?
Yeah. So first I moved from sunny California to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I learned it's very cold there and snows a lot. And I remember the moment of dragging a hairdryer plugged into my house out to my car to like defrost the windows of my car and the door so that I could open it. Just so sad. But anyway, that was my first kind of step out, you know, and I moved to Michigan. And then had this awesome opportunity to then move to Belfast, Northern Ireland, to do peace and conflict resolution work with Catholic and Protestant young people there. And again, just outside of my comfort zone, doing kind of pretty intense work, but feeling like God was just sort of building something in me that I just couldn't explain. But I just had the courage, I think, to just try it and go for it and take the risk and, you know. And then a big part of my job when I was in Ireland was then leading a trip of 80 college students from Belfast to Cape Town, South Africa. It was alongside Habitat for Humanity. And so we were just building houses in the townships outside of Cape Town. And I kept coming across the same story. I kept kind of hearing the same story. And that was these really talented high school students graduating near the top of their class who wanted to go on and do two things. Either one, go to a local university and study, or B, wanted to start a business of some kind. But because they were from the slums and didn't have the opportunity or the connections or resources, that just wasn't a possibility. And that just bugged me for some reason. I think that's when I really began reflecting on my privilege and my upbringing, kind of similar to what you were mentioning before, and thinking, my goodness, you know, my parents paid for me to go to college. Same with all of my friends. This is a very normal thing. You know, I think in the U.S., you know, 65% of all young people do some type of higher education post high school. And I kind of just began reflecting on that a lot, and I built these amazing friendships, and I just kind of, again, God, I think, was just after me, saying, pay attention to this, listen to this, and I could sense that he was really inviting me into something. And so I then left Cape Town, moved up here to Portland, started grad school, was staying in touch with these kids that I had met through these amazing tools like Facebook, and it was Skype and things like that. And then one day I was sitting on a bench in the park blocks downtown, and I really felt the Lord kind of say, Justin, will you deny for others what you demand for yourself? So are you going to take opportunities for you and then not allow others to have the same opportunities? And that was this, what I call now a moment of obligation. And it's this small little invitation from God that says, are you going to say yes to this or no? And I was kind of fired up in that moment. I walked to Powell's Books. I bought a book, How to Start and Build a Nonprofit, which wasn't very helpful. It was like one of those dummy guides, you know? Books, yeah, exactly. Wasn't helpful, but it was a symbol. Like, I spent $14 on this dumb book. I have to do something about it. And so then from the couch of my apartment with my roommate and then girlfriend, now wife, I started These Numbers Have Faces to help one young man that I met there in South Africa. And then, of course, God just took a hold of it and then just kind of took it to where it was. And so we ended now, I mean, we'll impact about 20,000 people a year across the African continent now, which is a pretty awesome growth from, you know, 10 or 12 years ago.
This might be difficult to answer, but I think it kind of relates to the first thing I asked you. But I think a lot of us have those moments where we feel this sense of something needs to be done. I know there's a problem. I don't really know what the solution is, but I see the problem and I want to do something about it. What was it that made you ultimately say yes and, you know, buy the book? And because I feel like a lot of us kind of come to the conclusion of something needs to be done, but not a lot of us actually get to the point where we end up doing something. So, you know, do you feel like you could pinpoint why you ultimately said yes? And, you know, obviously it led a lot further than you could have ever envisioned at the time. At the time, it was to help one person or a couple people. But it's led to a lot more than that. What kind of got the ball rolling for you to ultimately take the dive?
Yeah, I think that I began to realize, first and foremost, theologically, that I think that the way that God works in the world is through very small, kind of stealth, under the radar invitations to his people to join him in some way, shape, or form. I feel like what Jesus is doing or how he connects to me is him just saying over and over, follow me here or there, or connect with this person, or think about it like this. It's small little things. And I, you know, again, this is the God that came into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey, not a golden chariot, right? I think that he moves mainly through relationships, through small interactions. You know, in the book, I call them spiritual head nods. I mean, so minor, you know? And that we actually get, I think, a ton of different invitations every day that it's our job to just be open for, just like scanning for, and just little tiny things. And I think that so often we expect him to work like he's going to write it on the wall, he's going to blow something up in some way, he's going to use this powerful, you know, ribbon cutting ceremony or TED Talk or gala event or whatever else. And actually, I just think that's just not kind of how he works. I mean, this is a God who chooses to use us to actually bring about his kingdom. And for most of us, life is very, very ordinary. So I think that for me, I just, for some reason at that time, I don't know if he just kind of opened my eyes to it, of just being open to small little things. And so I think back to it, it was like one kid and this soccer team saying, will you help our brightest student attend college? He needs $3,000 in the next 2 years to make this thing happen. Will you help us? And yeah, I guess that kind of feels like a lot. I mean, that's a lot of money in some ways. And yet I knew that if I just got, you know, 20 people to give like $100 or something, it would add up and it would make sense. And so, man, I just think that so often We expect it to be something. We actually put too much pressure on it. And yet I just think that God is just constantly with us, like nudging us, just like, look at that, notice that, pay attention to that. And that if then we can just say yes to those small things, powerful things happen. And frankly, are we willing to pray that really dangerous prayer, which is the scariest one of all, which is like, God, I will say yes to whatever you are asking me. And I think so many folks don't want to actually do that because it'll mess up their nice little neat lives, you know? So anyway, that's kind of how it's, I guess, happened to me. And I think lastly, I think that's also how it's happened to so many others. If you take anyone who has done something remarkable, say, and you ask them, how does this start? Every single time, it goes back to this tiny little thing, like so minor. Someone said one thing to me. I saw one thing when I was 10 years old. My mom said this. This happened to me. I saw this. I felt this. And they're always small. And then it's that like mustard seed size stuff that then we then build on over time.
Yeah, I think we often, not wrongly, but we assume that the Holy Spirit always is in like the charismatic. And so, and this isn't a knock on those of you from the charismatic tradition, but I think we can often assume that the Holy Spirit is going to move in these big, huge, gigantic ways. And I think of like Elijah on the mountain, sure. And there's all these ways that kind of Elijah assumes that God's going to speak to him and God's not in it. And yet he's in this whisper. Mm-hmm. And so God shows up in the small, kind of easily overlooked. And so I think often God is trying to get into our lives or in our heads or our hearts with a whisper in a way that it would be really easy to overlook. And so most of us actually do. We overlook it. We totally miss what God is setting before us. Or like you're saying, we're so bent on our own way of life right now that we're not willing to adjust anything. And so we miss kind of the opportunity to make these shifts that would actually lead toward this amazing life that we don't get to experience because we're not looking for those subtle ways. So I think, yeah, I think you're totally right that we often miss these really subtle things, these kind of movements in the mind and the heart and in situations that we come into out in everyday life. Yeah. And therefore we miss these opportunities that God is like kind of like handing us and we just walk right by.
It's funny. In the book, I mentioned this thing that it's just this weird anecdote that I thought up, which is that, you know, what if somewhere in the spiritual realm, there's actually this huge warehouse of all these boxes with our names on them. And inside them is actually all of these missed opportunities from God, being it a chance to touch someone else's life, a chance to connect with someone, or probably more often a chance where God wants to actually connect with us. And or just be with us and just sit with us, and yet because we are busy and not really like really looking for them, we end up just not seeing them. And like, what if those things are actually stored somewhere? And actually, if you know we ever saw them, I think that it would cause great pain, which is why we will never see them. But just that, I think that probably at the end of our life, you know, will we ever see or like realize that actually there were so many chances for us to connect with God, which then connects us to others in some way. And I just think that we just miss stuff. And I just wish that we didn't, because I think that our lives would be so much fuller and so much, maybe even like a little bit more dangerous too, in regards to the fact that a lot of us like our very kind of safe Christianity, you know, type of thing. And actually, I think that what this God is calling us to is actually pretty radical. And I think that we're just missing things. And I think that what I really am hoping for is to see so many other, you know, people of faith gravitate toward those things that are going to be risky, because that's I think kind of where God actually meets us.
Of your work with these numbers have faces has been with government agencies, with grant companies, none of them necessarily faith based programs or individuals or companies or whatever. And yet most of what inspired you to start all that was very much a faith experience for yourself. So how has it been kind of like marrying these two? I don't like to, you know, paint things in a secular sacred divide, because I just don't think that's necessarily how God works. But you've had to do a lot of your work within a secular area. How has it been being a person of faith engaging governments?
Yeah. It's funny, man. I think early on, I mean, I'm a people pleaser, right? So I wanted our thing to work for all people and make it all happy and, you know, tied up with a nice little bow for everyone. And you realize that it's just not how it all works sometimes. And so I think early on in our work, we tried to be kind of all things to all people. So we would have our grant to the faith-based foundation and the church, and then the same grant, but we would just cut out all the like God language, you know? And I think I was pretty convicted by that after a time, going like, this is stupid. Like, this is so dumb. And the reality is that God is so in this. God inspired this thing. God loves these amazing students and entrepreneurs throughout East Africa more than I ever could. He has this massive vision for redemption that I'm so fortunate to have him invite me into. Just be who you are. Just be authentic in it. And so then we kind of made a shift. It was like, you know what? Screw it, man. Like, if someone doesn't want to fund us or whatever, great. Go find someone else, because there's so much other awesome work, you know? Like, we need it all. And so I began to not care. And, you know, I think we, like, raised less money a few years, and, you know, that is what it is. But then God showed up in his own way, because, of course, he just moves in ways that, you know, no government agency or granting foundation or philanthropist can ever do. And so we found that it actually worked out great. And so we kind of made a shift to be, you know, we walk this fine line, right, of, you know, we are faith-based, but, you know, we do work with all types of folks. And, you know, you don't have to pray a special prayer to be a part of our college program or things like that. But when you come to our trainings, there's a worship service, and there's discipleship work, and there's a curriculum, and bam, 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 bam. And we just kind of got to, I think, you get to a place where you realize that you just have to be yourself. You just got to express yourself as you are. And that's actually the best place to actually be. So, you know, not without its challenges, I would say, but I think I just love now being able to just say, hey, here's who we are. You're in? Great. If not, cool. It's fine.
I just think there's a lot of trepidation on the part of a lot of people of faith when they think about this big bad world, secular society, that they're just automatically going to be rejected. And there probably is some truth to that based on circumstances and court rulings and all of those sorts of things. Yeah. But what I hear you saying is that you've never been rarely have been flat out rejected because you have a faith emphasis.
No. And I think what's fascinating is that, you know, people know us by our fruit, right? And so what people, even secular folks or a government agency or a, you know, a secular foundation or a company or whatever, they can look at it and go, well, you guys are doing amazing work. And so what, like, the end product is that you have, you know, 100 different young business leaders that are starting companies, growing them, and hiring hundreds of folks. Like, that's an amazing end product. We want in. So I think that people, again, I think see it in those ways too, of like we want to invest in the thing that is actually changing lives first and foremost. But secondly, I think on a more personal level, I think so many Christians do, without meaning to, or just because it's just comfortable, we do wall ourselves off from folks who maybe think differently than us or vote differently than us or look or speak or act or whatever. And yet I've found that the number one way that I've been able to build friendships, maintain friendships, grow friendships, kind of link up with folks of all faiths, either no faith or any, or like anything else, is they've looked at the work that I've done and think that it's valuable and powerful, and that's a great thing. But secondly, it's just that folks want to be treated with respect and love and a connection. And my greatest friendships, I think, and joys for me come from people that maybe don't share the same faith, but we have just this, you know, mutual connection, and we love each other. And do I want to slowly over time evangelize and make this thing work. And again, I don't hide who I am ever, but it's just, if you go into it with this like agenda of like, okay, so in month three, I'm going to share with him this. And then in month 10, I'm going to say this to him. And hopefully that'll make him do this. And then hopefully I can convert him by whatever. Again, I mean, you can think about this in so many different ways, but man, I just found so much power in relationship first, and then letting the Holy Spirit do what it does. And it's amazing when, if you're open to that, if you've built a mutual connection with someone, and then you open yourself up and say, right, Holy Spirit, like, I want to invite this awesome friend of mine in. What do I do? And allowing him to really direct you, as opposed to the strategy of like, you know, my like verbal pitch to them is going to somehow get them or whatever, you know? So anyway, that's kind of how I think I've done it from a personal and professional way. And I've gotten heat for that, you know, on all sides. Either it's like too Christian, or it's not evangelical enough. But I think that's our like real battle, I think, as people of faith, especially in a post-Christian context, especially in the city where I live, which is, you know, primarily secular. How do you navigate that? And that's, I think, kind of our big battle, I think, for Christians here in the next 25, 50 years or so, is how do we navigate a very post-Christian kind of urban environment kind of throughout the Western world, I would say.
And what I hear you saying is that we should be maybe less concerned with making sure that we have the right pitch and more concerned with doing the right work.
Yeah, I think doing the right work and then showing up as someone who loves them in whatever way, you know. And I have an amazing friend of mine named Liz, who lives down in Orange County, who her best friends in on her street, there's like a Muslim woman from Palestine and the secular Jew, and then there's her, and then there's the immigrant from, I think, Ghana, and they're like best buds, and their kids all hang out, you know, and they talk around the table about faith and this and that. And she's like, you have no idea how alive my faith life is as I navigate life with these folks who, you know, who just aren't the same like white mega church, you know, type of like people. And like, that is her like doing the work, man. And it actually shows up best because she takes the phone call from her friend and watches her kids when her friend's got to go to the doctor's appointment or whatever. Like, that's actually doing life. And so, yeah, I would say the work is valuable. Yeah, doing humanitarian work and folks seeing that you're a good person or whatever, that's fine. That's, I think, half of it. But the other half is like, how can we just be people of God, loving others without this? I mean, of course, yeah, you've got to have a plan in some ways, and like you want to be strategic in some ways too. But man, like, it's just about loving people and just being in their lives. And I think that so many Christians just miss that or get freaked out, and then there's the politics in it, or, you know, whatever. So,
just last month, Justin released his first book titled Made for These Times, where he really answers the question of how we can find significance in something greater than ourselves. And he then really tells his story and operates as a guide for helping the reader be able to produce this kind of making a difference life for themselves and those around them. But really, the overarching premise of the whole thing is that we were made for today. And I would describe today, the context of our times, as very tumultuous and divided, with discord all around us. And so he's really saying that we're made for this time that we find ourselves in. And so I wanted to ask him, like, what is it about us that makes it so that we were really created by God for today? Which is really an incredible thought if you really dive down into it. And so we talk about, what is it about our times that are unique, and how have we been created to make a difference in them?
I think a little bit of context first off. Yes, things feel crazy. This is fueled by a 24-hour news cycle, social media, alerts on your phone, a president who tweets every day, I mean, whatever else, right? So that drives it. But I think there's also important context for us to know. first and foremost, we're actually living in the safest times in human history. So the data shows us that currently we don't have massive geopolitical forces at war with one another. So while, you know, a bomb can go off in Afghanistan or even in Times Square, and we think that it's unsafe, actually, again, we are more safe than we have ever been. Okay, so that's, I think, something to think about. Now, school shootings in the U.S. is a big issue, obviously. But, I mean, again, across kind of the Western world, we live in unbelievably safe times. Secondly, I mean, more people have been lifted out of poverty in the last 50 years than in the last 500 years. And so while that may not affect us, you have billions of people around the world having access to cash, to credit, to jobs, to opportunities. I mean, there's like amazingly awesome things that are happening. When you talk about the empowerment of women across the whole world, I mean, there are like really spectacular things happening. We all have a smartphone in our pocket that is currently a million times more powerful than all of NASA's combined computing in 1969 when they put a man on the moon. So again, we just have access to so many things. So I think, yes, times feel crazy, but there's also important context for us to think about that, you know, actually things are actually pretty good in some ways. But I don't want to discount the fear and the anxiety and the pain that so many folks are going through. There's a real issue in this country around people of color feeling marginalized. I mean, we have like massive, massive issues. But going into it, I think that it is helpful to have, I think, kind of a wider sort of historical lens, so to speak. We often wish for the heroes of our history. We often think to ourselves, my goodness, if only Dr. King were here, things would be so much different. If only so-and-so was in the Oval Office, things would be so much different. If only these like leaders of the faith and leaders in our world were actually here, things would be so much different. And yet we have been called and made for a very specific time. And I believe that our birth was not an accident, that we are here for a very specific reason, and that God is totally in that, right? And so what I've seen, though, is that the people that are able to find something in this world and then do something great with it have the courage to understand that. They are able to see where they fit kind of in this point of Western history and actually go, you know what, I think that I have a really important part to play. And then, as I mentioned earlier, they are also willing to see these tiny, small, little invitations, these tiny little moments of obligation, and see small little things and then actually take them and then, you know, drive them forward. So it does just take someone, I think, who just has kind of eyes open and who is able to see a lot of the challenges around them, but also really know that, you know what, like, I'm not meant to just survive this or just kind of make it through. I'm actually meant to thrive and actually be a part of something powerful here, big or small, you know, within the walls of your own home, in your community, across the world, you know, whatever.
What would be like a great first step? Somebody's feeling, you know, they're listening to this and they're maybe inspired by, you know, this guy went to Africa and then he started this nonprofit that's provided college education for hundreds of people. Like, well, I want to do something. And I think, you know, what you were just talking about, like, we don't have to think global. We can just think about our neighbor. But what would be like a good first step? Somebody's like, I want to live beyond myself starting right now. But I've never really done this before. I've been incredibly selfish, but I want to do something that actually cares about the people around me. What would be like your encouragement? Try this or think about this.
Yeah, I'd say there's two things. Firstly, we have to stop comparing ourselves to other people. So we have to stop looking at someone else's middle or end or climax or celebration and thinking that, you know, because I'm not there now, I'm a total waste of space or whatever. So there's this like little unique trick, I think, that I use that's so powerful for me, that I think everyone should, which is that, you know, whenever we see someone else, you watch a TED Talk, you're looking online, you see a friend of yours, a friend from college or whatever it is, and you see them doing something awesome, we oftentimes kind of can feel bad about ourselves. This comes from me most often when actually really well-meaning people will actually send me an email or a text message, and they will say, "Justin, have you heard of blank author or blank awesome organization or blank, you know, person? Like, you should learn from them." Unfortunately, whenever I see that, I just feel terrible about myself.
I'm not good enough.
Yeah, exactly, which sucks. And so, what I've learned though is that whenever I see something where I begin comparing myself to other people, I have a little like mental trick that I then I use. And what I do is I say to myself, I take a deep breath, and then I say, "They have their story and I have mine. They have their story and I have mine." And I'll say it like 20 times, you know, whether in my car or wherever I am. And it's that little mental exercise that just makes me know like there's room for me here too. And just because someone else is doing something awesome, so can I. So that's, I think, my first thing. Second thing, practically, I would say, is this just the power of 30 minutes per day. And so what that means is that if you have that tiny inkling of this thing that maybe you're meant to go and do, that maybe you've kind of felt this invitation from, or you feel like you're just trying to, you know, move forward with something, it's all about time management, right? So it's just about though 30 minutes per day, morning, afternoon, evening, 3 a.m., whatever it is, to just do something in relation to that concept for you. So there, when I was first starting, it was, can I spend 30 minutes per day reading about this thing, writing about it, talking to someone on the phone, praying about it, just going for a walk and just trying to commit my brain power to it. And again, humans are just driven by habit. And so if we can just do 30 minutes per day on this one thing, you'll be so surprised by just how over time this can just grow and grow and grow and grow. So I would say those are kind of the two very, very basic, I think, first steps towards something.
What I love about the things that Justin had to share with us is that I know that they have been lived and practiced and worked out in real life and with real people. And so I think you can really take to heart a lot of the things that he had to share with us and hopefully begin to implement some of those things into your own lives for the sake of making a difference in the times that we live in today, because our world needs people who care about people enough to actually do something for them. You can check out all of the show notes from this episode again at my website, manofdepravity.com. And I mentioned at the very beginning that I had a special treat to share with you at the end of this episode, which is coming up right now. My church, New Harvest Church in Salem, Oregon, is just about to release their first worship album, and as kind of a sneak preview and to get you excited about hopefully picking up this album or streaming it on whatever site you might use, here is one of the songs from the album. It's basically a new rendition arrangement to the hymn, "Be Still My Soul." And so we'll close out the episode with you being able to listen to the full-length track of "Be Still My Soul."
Be still, my soul. The Lord is on your side. Bear patiently the cross of grief or pain. Leave to your God to order and provide. In every change, He faithful will remain. Be still, my soul, your best, your heavenly friend. Through thorny ways, still my soul. Your God will undertake to guide the future as He has the past. Your hope, your confidence, let nothing shake. All now mysterious is bright. Shall be